Good evening and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Once in a while, we get to talk to perhaps the smartest football mind out there as far as the NFL, even in college. My man, he is a social media budding superstar, my man Corey. Good evening, Corey. How are you?
What's happening, Big Terry?
Hey, how goes it, man?
Hey, before you start burning through hella tape, I could talk like how I talk, right? I'm good. You know what? Hey, I'll scale it back a little bit.
Just a little bit.
You got kids listening. A little bit. It's hard, bro.
I know.
I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do.
Now, one of the things that Corey is perhaps the best mind at is trench play on each side of the ball. Very few people break down the lines of scrimmage like he does. Corey, when you're evaluating a lineman, be it offensive or defensive, what are the three things that you look for?
One of the good things that I look for, especially being at this level right now, right, is just like their aggression and their mental aspect of the game, right? Like you can't just have somebody that's out there hot-headed without any smarts to it. Like there was a guy that just got drafted, last name Penning. He's out there and he's got like a reputation of being a badass, right? But I mean, you get hella penalties. So, yeah. I'm not into that.
Because he's going to come across what folks from where we're from call it. He'll come across the wrong one.
Yeah. He said it like the wrong one. Like the news anchors be doing.
He will encounter somebody who is his equal physically, and he's going to think it's church because somebody's going to lay their hands on him, and not in a holy way.
No, man, now, I like to look at how explosive a player is going to be, how, like, if he has that controlled aggression, but you got to have some of that because in the trenches, you're going to be in a fight all day long, and there are players that are very cerebral, and there's people that are calm that can whoop you without that kind of aggression. And that's fine, and they're successful. That's just not the types that I'm drawn towards. When I'm looking at athletes, that's not the type that I'm drawn towards.
When I look at offensive linemen, I think of that one line from Bad Boys 2 where Martin Lawrence opens the door and his daughter's date is at the door, and he asks him one simple question. Can you fight? It was that thing that when you look at our offensive linemen, defensive linemen, do they have it to go from snap to whistle?
You know what? That's the best way to sum it all up. Can you fight? Because that's really what it is. Because they're going to have to get in a fight all game long.
I mean, they call it the phone booth for a reason, where it's close quarters, where it's not pretty. It is like $3 steak tough, and you got to be willing to fight somebody for the better part of 60 minutes for 7 to 8 seconds at a time. And that is that's the ugly part of the game that people don't see. That's why I think that linemen are rightfully paid a lot of money. Now, before we jump into the Raiders draft, I have a few general draft questions. Okay. Is there any one defensive lineman that you thought went too high?
Was there any one that I thought went too high? The first one.
Facts.
You know, I don't want to get into it too crazy like that. He's probably going to be an incredible player, have a great career. I just didn't think at any point – I didn't think he was going to be number one overall. It's always confusing to me how these players start skyrocketing after football is done being played. Like, if you thought he was a pretty good player but not at the cream of the crop, if you thought that when you were watching him play, how come when you stopped watching him play, he got better? I don't understand that.
I look at what the Jags have. They have Josh Allen. They have DeJuan Smoot already there. They didn't need a third guy to come in who will possibly cut into Smoot's time because he's the one over our pick, so he's going to play. And what I saw from Walker, yes, he has the tools. I get that, but two things. You have to also remember which defense he was on and who was around him. And is it going to translate to the next level? You won't be playing Vanderbilt every third Sunday of the month. You won't be going to Hines Community College and playing them. You won't be playing these, like, teams that you should be able to walk over. Every Sunday, he's going to face an offensive tackle who is probably equally talented at the spot. Where it comes to him, I worry about the mental aspect because he has a bunch of expectations.
I think, you know, I think bigger than that, because I don't want to take nothing away from him. He's incredible. You know what I'm saying? Bigger than that is in Georgia, they got a chance to scheme a lot of stuff for him, right? Like, they got a chance to scheme him free, and he had a lot of players around him that were going to allow him to do that. And I don't think in the NFL from week to week, everybody's not Michael Parsons, right? Where you just, hey, just go let him kind of roam around, and we're going to put him here and put him here and put him here. I don't know if that's really going to work for him the same way. I hope that it does. If I was going to pick the first player off the board, I don't know. I wouldn't pick him.
I wouldn't pick him with the top 10 pick. Not because of talent, but there's so many other talented players where I look at him. I look at Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon, who I like better.
I don't understand that. I don't understand his slide. I don't get it.
I think people saw Walker and they saw that while he has the tools, he's still kind of a work in progress. It's like being a dirtbag guy and there's always that one woman who thinks that they can fix them. The Jags think they can fix Trayvon Walker. Like they see the good points.
You getting extreme. You talk about dirtbag guys. He doesn't need to be fixed like that. He might have some things that need to be coached up or honed or learned or whatever.
Like his game. Hey,
his game. Let's clean it up a little bit. But
his game.
He's going extreme, bro. Like.
But I see, like, a Thibodeau, and I'm like, there's a guy, yes, he had a couple of injury issues, but his length, he's much taller, he's just as quick, but he can string together his moves, where he's not a one-note person, where he's not going to sit there and beat you with the same move or try to every snap. He's going to incorporate great hand placement and quick hands. I mean, about Max Crosby in the past about how quick his hands were. His hands got him drafted.
Did you see Max Crosby Light got drafted? The one from Michigan, Aiden Hutchinson? Hey, yes. Watch them play. Hey, watch them play and turn the color off, right? It looks like how Max looked when he first came in. They play anyway. It's crazy.
And I just thought that Thibodeau I liked better. You got guys like, and there was a guy from Mississippi, Sam Williams. Who I thought that Sam, he had the talent to be a top 25 pick, but Sam also had a run-in or three with the law. I think that would cut him for being a top 25 pick. It's just some of these guys got to, like, be careful. Like, who's it, DeMarvin Leal? Should have been a first-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, got caught for weed, which is not a tremendous offense, but if you're in Texas, you got to be smarter than that. I mean,
the rules are the rules, and I'm never going to judge anybody for that particular offense, but at the same time, the rules are the rules, and if those rules are going to prevent you from creating something generational for your family, you got to take a look at some of those things, man. You got to be a little bit more cognizant of that, and I think it's not just the offense that makes people slide. Maybe they look at that like, man, you know how serious this is and you still did it. It's not the offense. It's your mentality.
Exactly. Now, which guy do you think defensive lineman should have been picked higher?
Which one do I think should have been picked higher? I don't know, man, because I had a whole line of things. I thought Ebiketie was going to get picked up just a little bit higher than he did. I don't know. I liked a lot of dudes. And then I really dove into the guys that we got right after that. And
yes. Now, there's a guy from Iowa State. I'm not going to attempt to butcher his name, but he was a guy in, like, the mid rounds where I thought, because he's 6'6 and 318, but yet he can play the 3 technique or 5 technique. He even played a 1 technique. And that type of versatility is going to help somebody a lot.
Well, yeah, you want to say that too. The versatility is going to be the biggest thing. It's funny that we're talking about that because I think that's what we're going to have to talk about with almost all of the draft picks that we got and all of the stuff that they've been doing, because it looks like versatility. And I think about that when I think about the center. I mean, not the center, the guard, the tackle, whatever they want to call him, and the fact that you can't really pin down what he's going to be called on our team, that tells you versatility is going to be important.
Exactly. But we will dive into the draft right after this break. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FBC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, our guy, Corey. Corey, as we dive into the draft, we mentioned versatility. It's just nice, just even before we start to run down the draft picks, to have adults in the room drafting. I mean, you had, like, Calvin Pickles for, like, the longest time out there that's, like, messing up and just picking anything he saw and just, you know.
I can't say that all the time for two reasons, right? I can't say that all the time because we got a couple of really nice players on our roster right now that we ended up getting late in the draft. Yes, we might have screwed up the first part. We got some late players that are important. And then as far as the ones that we got this time, we still don't know how good they're going to be. I got some strong opinions, but we don't know how good they're going to be. So we can't really say that the new generation is killing it yet, but it does look good to me.
I guess my thing is, like, it's more of a calmer approach. It's more like, you know, they're not going to draft a straight speed safety out of Clemson who can only run in a straight line with no lateral movement.
Why don't you just say his name, bro?
Like,
whatever, man.
Like, if they're going to buy a car, they're going to buy a Ferrari. They're not going to buy a Viper that can only go fast straight, can't turn, can't corner, can't maneuver. And they decided to go the smart route. The first person they picked was Dylan Parham. I like the fact that this team looks like they are going to train him at multiple positions. The fact that he has the ability to play center, to play guard, and to be able to move. He moves well. He's not giant, but he's quick in his hands and his feet. His hands and feet work in concert, where we've seen linemen that will either move their feet or their hands, never at the same time, John Simpson. But
yeah, get out of here with that. I mean, you might be accurate. But look, when I'm looking at him, though, because he's kind of – I'm not going to say he's little, but he's not really that big, right? His lower body's a little bit probably closer to NFL size. His upper body got to catch up some. They're going to put a little bit of weight on him. But he does move really well. He does move – he's not a bulldozer or nothing like that. You know who kind of looks like – and I hope fans don't get crazy about this shit. I mean about this, but he kind of looks like Andre James already, but he moves a little bit better. So I could say Rodney Hudson, but everybody's going to lose their mind. He's not Rodney Hudson. Only Rodney Hudson is that dude. But I see him blocking in the second level. Great. I see him in the second level almost every single play, you know, and his pass pro is that he's a technician. He's a technician. And he moves around well. I have no idea what his workout numbers were, what his 40 time, I don't know, and I don't care. He moves really, really well. His feet are always in a perfect place. I like him. I like him. He's definitely probably going to have to get stronger, but I like him.
I like the fact that Parham, like you said, he moves well. He played at Memphis where they had a mix of running pass where, yes, he had – I don't think he gave up a sack during this last year, or may have given up one. And it's just the fact that he is quicker and the fact that the offensive line has gone away from the trying to bludgeon people to death to being a little technically oriented, where you had such a strong offensive line that the Raiders paid for the longest time, and now they have a guy who can actually go with technique. Instead of going the route of John Mugabe, they decided to go the route of Bernard Hopkins.
You be swinging for the fences, bro. Like, you don't never just talk regular. You just bow, bow. Hey, you be taking shots.
This is how my mind works. Now, Where do you see Parham ending up?
Where do I see Parham ending up? I'd see him ending up on the bench early, I hope, right? Like, he's going to make the team. I don't think he's going to be a starter. I think he may be a center. He may be a guard. And depending on how much weight they can put on him, if they can put weight on him, he might play a little bit of that swing. You know what I'm saying? Because it's one of them underrated positions in the NFL. You need a big lineman that can come in there and be the sixth offensive lineman or whatever. And he's not that big of a guy, but I see him being a center guard kind of situation. He just moves too well. He's not big enough to be on the outside, but he moves so good. If we're really going to be running this short game and screen game and all that stuff, he's going to be great in it.
I miss Gabe Jackson. Just a random thought. Gabe Jackson is still missed, you know, on this team. Like
I hope people understand how good Gabe Jackson was that he's not here.
Mm-hmm. Because then you have the clowns who will sit there and say, well, his PFF score, bruh, I could give less than a damn about PFF. I could care less. I care about what my eyes say. And my eyes tell me that Gabe Jackson was really, really good. And there's a void since he left. There's just a giant void that you could drive a car through. And it's, I think when it comes to analyzing things, we both know this, there are people who depend on nebulous, you know, stats that they can't interpret, but somebody writes them on paper. Oh, he had a score of this. What does it mean? I can't tell you. You're dumb. Get away from me. Now.
Yeah, like I don't get it. That's not popular to me. Not popular for me. And there's metrics and all that other stuff, and they're really good tools. And and these guys are right a lot of times, but that's just maybe I'm too old. I gotta see, can you play or not? Right. And I need to see you play. I don't need to see if you're, you know, your wing, whatever. Can you play or not? Can you fight? I want to see that.
It's a gut feeling where film tells the entire story. People are like, well, you know, he had a win rate of this, bro. I don't care. Did he do his job? Did he do his job consistently? That should be the metric. And one of the next picks that people could not understand was Zeus, Zamir White out of Georgia. I like this pick because you have a guy who runs angry, physical, with speed. Enough speed. Not like, yes, he tested well, but like you said, we don't care. The fact that he can put daylight between himself and everybody else, but when you have a defensive back, a linebacker trying to tackle him, they're going to pay for it. They will catch pain. What did you like about Zamir White?
Well, you know, that's, you know, the kind of football that I like by now. And so I liked him because he plays football like he's supposed to be a linebacker. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going out there and he looks for, I don't know if he's looking for contact or not, but, you know, you hear that 50 Cent clip. He's like, I never want a problem, but when people tell me they want a problem, I say, no problem. And that's kind of how he approaches tacklers. You know what I'm saying? He want to run away from me, but if he can't, he'll bring it to you. You know what I'm saying? And you better pack a lunch because it's going to take all day to bring him down. You consistently see him dragging people. It's not just that initial pop. It's not that you see him dragging people 3, 4, 5 yards and 3 or 4 or 5 people. That I really like. He's got home run hitter speed, but he don't have that Josh Jacobs kind of acceleration where he's full speed instantly.
Nice. With this episode of Full Press Raiders podcast. Now, before the break, we were talking about Zamir White and Josh Jacobs. Why do you think people just, I don't know, like they were about to throw Josh Jacobs out. And what do they not understand?
Here's the thing, right? Like, there's people get so mixed up in social media and all that other stuff. There's things about Josh Jacobs. He gets hurt. You know, he does get hurt, and he's going to get hurt when he's the weapon, when he's the guy, he's the closer, and he's going to be shouldering that load the whole time. People somehow hold it against him. Like, it's, I don't know. So he has some problems with that kind of stuff, and he doesn't get along with the fans. He says they're wishy-washy. But who cares about that stuff? I care about what he brings to the team. He brings a lot to the team, and I think Zeus White plays like him, but Josh Jacobs is still better than him.
Mm-hmm. Because he has an NFL, not just skills, but he's been here. He's done this, and we have no idea what Zamir White will bring.
He's got better short area quickness. Like, Josh Jacobs' foot speed, and, like, it's ridiculous. It's maybe he's not going to have a home run here. Maybe he's not going to have 70-yarders, and maybe that's what Zamir White is supposed to do. Maybe you need to be more, like, I don't know if he's there to replace Josh Jacobs or replace Kenyon Drake. He can't catch the ball, though, so who knows?
Like, for me, I look at Josh Jacobs. I know that, you know, this is how my mind works, but I think of Mike McCallum, former champion, former middleweight champion, nicknamed the body snatcher. Why? Because he wasn't great with power up top, but he would slowly take you apart by attacking your body, by hitting you over and over again. That's Josh Jacobs' game. He will wear down a defense. That 3-yard run in the first quarter will become a 9-yard run in the fourth quarter. People fail to understand that that's needed. Like, everyone can't go 80 yards, but what you could do is take up time on the clock, save your defense, and slowly bludgeon the opposing defense. Go ahead.
I feel like the new staff looks at that and I think they appreciate that. So I don't know if they're trying to replace Josh Jacobs with somebody that can do the same thing, because Zeus has a lot of that same to his game. He's going to beat you down over the game. Or is it the fact that, like, you know what, we're going to have a fresh Zeus and a fresh Josh, and we're just going to beat the heck out of these guys, and we're going to act like they're closers for the whole game, but we'll always have a hammer. And it opens up the passing game. So I like the way he fits into the offense. He fits into the offense because you don't have to change what you do with Josh Jacobs. You can run the same packages.
Now, one of my favorite picks was the round 4 pick of Neil Farrell Jr., the tackle out of
LSU. Don't get me started, bro.
I like this pick. I love this pick. Why? Because Neil Farrell Jr. solves two problems. Like, see, he's a guy that didn't test well, but if you turn on certain games in SEC, he is wearing these centers out and these guards out like new suits on prom night, beating them sideways. He is a fighter. He's strong. He leans on you.
Yeah.
He gets in that space and he hurts people.
And you know what? And the good thing is like he is going to lean on you. He is going to hurt you. He's going to run you over. He's going to do all that stuff. But at the same time, this is what you don't get out of a lot of big guys in college. His what is it called? It's not gap integrity. But anyway, he is the way that he two gaps or whatever he's playing with the kind of technicality he's playing is unbelievable. Like he's not guessing. He's not just jumping gaps. Now he's way quicker than you think coming off that ball. He's a hell of a lot quicker than you think. He's the first one off the ball a lot of times. He comes off the ball, but he keeps his integrity. He keeps his rushing lane, and he closes off the next rushing lane. Linebackers are going to love him. They're going to love him. And the good thing is he doesn't just do that because you can scheme him to play a 3-tech, not really a 3, but he can rush. He can penetrate. He's not a good pass rusher, but he's going to penetrate because he's not going to lose ground. I like this pick. I like him to be Jonathan Hankins type.
This might be my favorite pick of the entire draft because they had a need. You have Jonathan Hankins, who Farrell will probably supplant either next year or the following year. And you have a guy in Farrell who he plays the way you expect a nose tackle to play. You expect it. You expect them to have the numbers on their jersey kind of scrunched up to prevent being held. Yep. You want to see that face mask kind of bent or kind of chipped. You expect that. He plays that way. And Patrick Graham has a certain type of defensive lineman that he prefers. This is a type of defensive lineman he prefers. Somebody he could give a damn about stats, film, put the film in. He is present. He will make the edge rushers that much better. Their job is easier now.
That's where you come back to that word versatility again, right? So, like, are we going to just have him playing a true nose or anything like that? Or is he going to push out a little bit? Could he be a defensive tackle in a 3-4? And I think he can. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he just has to be a nose. He can go out there closer to the 5 because he moves around a little bit, bro. I'm telling you, he can move around a little bit. I'm sure whatever his 40 time was, it was probably bad, but he could move around a little bit.
All he had to do is be quick for those 5 or 10 yards, you know, around the line of scrimmage, and he is. He
shows you play next to Max. That's it.
Now, the next pick is also kind of interesting. They had Matthew Butler out of Tennessee. Now, they're going to slide him as a 3, but he's played 4. He's played the 4 tech. He's played 5. He is versatile. He's quick. Not the biggest guy, but they needed disruption as far as a 3 technique tackle. They lost that when they lost Solomon Thomas. How do you see Matthew Butler within the confines of his defense?
Well, I think that what the Raiders did on a lot of different levels, it looks like they draft a guy that looks like another guy that looks like another guy. You know what I'm saying? So we just finished saying how Neil Farrell is kind of like Jonathan Hankins. And now I think this, you know, Butler, I don't know that they see him as a top tier guy or anything like that, but I think what they were getting out of Kendall Vickers or hoping to get out of Vickers, that's what they can get out of this guy because he can be a
break. We have mentioned Matthew Butler and his ability to possibly give the Raiders what Kendall Vickers was supposed to. Do you see any flaws in this game that he immediately needs to work on?
Well, I don't want to sound salty, bro, but, like, I don't know if – I just didn't get too excited. I watched a couple of games. I just didn't get too excited because you want to know if somebody can fight, right? And I want to see a little bit more out of your hands. I want to see you get a little bit more extension. I want to see you shedding blockers with your hands. And I just don't know how long you're going to count on being quicker than everybody. How long are you going to do that? I mean, as soon as you got to put on a knee brace, it's over. Mm-hmm. So I'm worried about that.
I think with him, he might be like a rotational tackle where you might not have to count on him to do too much other than spell the starter. But
well, I mean, he was All-American, I think I saw that somewhere. He was All-American, so he's a good player. But I just, why am I not? I don't know. I guess I got bored watching him. So I don't know if that might be more of a me problem than a him problem, but I just didn't get excited.
It was less exciting because there were much better tackles around that I thought that they could have drafted, but for what they want, because again, that word versatility, this is who they got. Now, this other pick, you got Thayer Munford, who guard tackle from Ohio State. He is another guy that didn't time well, but never missed a snap. Can play multiple positions. Gives the back end of that offensive line depth and quality depth in case somebody gets hurt, because I really don't want to have to depend on Brandon Parker.
No, I don't either. And here's the thing: when you start talking about Thayer Munford, the guys that they just brought in late, I don't know how much they're going to contribute. If they're going to contribute, if it's somebody that they make the team or anything, and I'm probably biased because isn't he from Ohio State, and I just don't trust Ohio State offensive linemen. I don't know what it is. You just get bit sometimes. You know, sometimes how people got bit by the USC wide receiver. I feel like I don't know about the Ohio State offensive linemen. Something just turned me off.
I think the last one I trusted was Orlando Pace, and that was forever ago. My hair was one color.
Right. I don't know. I'm scary, bro. And it sucks that people get reputations and you get that kind of stuff and you stick to it. But I hear Ohio State offensive line. I remember a few years ago when I was looking at Khalil Mack, and that's when I decided he was the absolute best edge in the draft, is after I watched him play Ohio State.
In Ohio State, he beat somebody sideways. I think it was Jamarco. No, it was not Jamarco Jones. It was somebody that probably didn't make the league. Somebody got turnstiled and just got obliterated. Where I think it's more of a product of the skill position guy they have on the outside that make them look better. Because you had Nick Petit Ferrer get absolutely abused by Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson in the last game when Ohio State played Michigan. He was supposed to be their best lineman in a while.
Did Ojabo end up in Baltimore? Is that where Ojabo went?
Yes.
He is going to love it there, bro. Dang.
Yes. He's going to love it there because you got on the other side, you got Patrick Queen right there. And they drafted a safety, so they have a stacked secondary. All they need to do is get Lamar Jackson a receiver too. That's not short.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. It's, you know, you talk about people that build up reputations, like the Baltimore Ravens. Look at them; they built up that reputation. Like no matter what, our draft gonna kick ass, and it does all the time.
And they sent away a Hollywood Brown, which, if people know, DeAndre Hopkins got sat down for the first six games of the season because he failed the PED test.
Dang.
Which should be like an
on the needle.
I mean, I'm stunned. This is the last dude I thought that would ever. What? I mean, nah. But it just.
I mean, all kind of things could be performance enhancing, but I was shocked. But, you know, hey, they're playing for hundreds of millions of dollars. I know people that are doing steroids for free.
Yeah. just cause.
Right, like dummies.
I mean, it could have been human growth hormone, even though he should have shared it with Kyler Murray.
You don't have to do that. You don't have to. Why do you need to do that? You don't have to do that. What happens if you meet these people in person?
Well, I see it like this. I stand on what I say. In video game hands, they rated E for everybody.
Come on, man. But you're okay. We're getting old. You don't mess around and find out the wrong way. You're okay? we don't move the same no more.
In my head and my heart, I do. And I'm wrong. No, but it's funny because when you see some people in this business and you see people doing what we do, a lot of them can't take any kind of criticism. Like, some can, but some just, they get super emotional about it. Where if they can't take criticism of somebody in the media, how are they going to take a coach's criticism?
I'm a rough one to talk about with that stuff because I'm an emotional individual. I don't like criticism. You know, well, I like criticism, but I don't respond to it well. So I don't know. I can't really say that stuff. But at the end of the day, a lot of these guys are, I wouldn't say they're kids because some of them have kids coming into the game. They're still young. You got to understand that they mature differently.
That's true, but for me, it's like I look at some of the over-emotional types, and some of these players come in and they just – now, not to say that some of the people in media, some of these wild fans who will tweet at a player because they messed up their fantasy team. I think of Todd Gurley, who had the greatest response to a fan mad at his – that Todd Gurley got hurt in this fantasy game. Pull up. That is what Todd Gurley said. Automatic social media Hall of Famer Todd Gurley. Now,
right.
And narrator, the fan never pulled up.
He, in fact, did not pull up.
He did not pull up. But no, when you look at this team and you look at the Raiders, do you think that Derek Carr will finally win a playoff game this year?
Yeah, I'm back on the Derek Christ trade. Look, I'm not because he's suddenly unbelievable, but, like, how can you not, bro? Like, how can you not? What's around you? How can you not succeed now?
You know what Josh McDaniels did for Derek Carr? Imagine going bowling, right? And you see the lane. They put in the bumpers for Derek Carr. They shortened the lane and gave him oversized pins.
Yeah, and he out there bowling with a beach ball. Like, how can you not? How can you not?
That's what they did for him. That is exactly what they did for him, and they literally made it so easy with the talent around. You can't mess this up. Like,
it's assuming they keep Darren Waller, you know, assuming they keep Darren Waller.
He's underpaid. Now, I'm about to, you know, possibly say a comment that folks will get mad, but I don't think Darren Waller is a top three tight end anymore.
That's your business. That's what you say. I'm too much of a fan to jump in on that one.
Let me explain. He's fourth. I think that Mark Andrews has slipped by him a little bit.
God, he is good as hell, ain't he? Shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, you think it's Mark Andrews, George Kittle, and Travis Kelce, not in that particular order, but you think it's those guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's no shade at Waller, but with Andrews, he is – I can't explain how –
He's doing a lot with a little.
Yeah, how dependent the Ravens offense is on the tight end. Where in this offense, you have Renfro, you have Adams now, you have Jacobs, you have other targets. Where you have Lamar Jackson, Mark Andrews, and the cast of who's this?
Yeah. And he's still the man in the receiving game. And he's still the man.
Exactly. I like Waller. I like what he brings. But I'm hoping when the offense shakes out, they give him a little more, not so much vertical routes, but maybe a deeper slant or a deeper post. Because they can move around, even use him as like an X. Because I still am not sure about Bryan Edwards. Am I wrong?
I hate that you say that, and you might be right. You might be right, but I'm holding out hope for Bryan Edwards.
The hope I do hold out is that he was misused in the last regime. Like they were trying to have him win with quickness. That's not his game. He is a big physical wide receiver.
You see him in the first part of last year. He looked, you know what I'm saying? There's reasons to be hopeful. If you look at the first part of last season, there's reasons to be hopeful with Edwards. But, you know, there's also reasons to be skeptical.
I mean, I just want the offense to click, and I want more from the secondary because I'll be honest, even though he's only 25 years old, time is winding down for Trayvon Mullen.
What? Oh, okay. Oh, hold on. I thought you meant married. I was like, I thought you were talking about the rookie.
No.
Mullen. No, I'm with you on that one. I thought you were talking about the rookie. I'm like, wait, hold on. He just got here.
No. Mullen is, when he's right, he is an excellent number two. When he's wrong, he's grabbing folks when he gets torched. Yeah. He's missing tackles. He's leaning with his head. He's not tracking the ball right. And they've given him an ample chance. And I'm hoping that, like, Nate Hobbs, if he can take an Uber to the field, will be able to.
His case got settled or something today. He paid his penance, or he's a free man or whatever. It's over.
Right? Get that brother a bite. Seriously. I mean, that's pass. Something. But with Mullen, I don't know. Just I think he's reached his level here. And as far as Merrick, I like Merrick. Merrick, I like him. I like the fact that he has range as a safety. Speaking of safeties, there is no one.
Don't you do it. Don't you do it.
In this entire fan base who follows the Raiders. I'm about to compliment you, man. Sit here and enjoy this compliment. That is a more ardent supporter of Jonathan Abram than you are.
Who's the hardest? There's nobody the bigger supporter than me. No one. Jonathan Abram is the man.
Now, what do you know about this defense that makes him a perfect fit? And You said that you see big things from this year. Sell me on this.
I can't sell you on this. I'm telling you, look, Jonathan Abram is the man, right? Jonathan Abram is the man. He's going to have the opportunity to do that. And I'm banking a little bit on Patrick Graham just because of how creative he gets with some of the safeties, and he's worked with some of the bigger safeties. And I think that Abram plays. He plays like he's our best linebacker, right? And everybody wants to say he sucks. Watch him play the Cleveland Browns last year. Yeah. But whatever. There's things that he does that so well, and the aggression is ridiculous. His instincts are ridiculous. He does have maybe his hip hurts a little bit, you know, when he gets out there that deep center or the deep thirds, maybe he starts, I don't know what happens out there. Stuff starts happening. Maybe they can clear it up, but something happens. He's a shark in that box, and even like probably 12 yards off the ball, and then he gets in deep water.
And do you hear the theme song from Jaws? He's like looking around like, help.
Straight up, bruh. But we're going to see. All right, we're going to see. We're going to see how much of that was injury. How much of that was a rookie. He's going to the Pro Bowl this year.
He has played better each successive year. I'll give him this. He has played better.
Pro Bowl. Yes, he is.
Now,
he's going to the Pro Bowl.
Do you think in a concept of 3-4, you could slot Jonathan Abram in like a Deion Buchanan role, like a money backer, like a linebacker in that kind of hybrid 3-4 scheme?
Hell yeah. Watch the Browns game. He's a safety, yeah, right. He played linebacker all game. Watch it. So
believe it or not, I have more faith in Jonathan Abram being a linebacker than Divine Diablo being a linebacker in this league. He has all the traits, he has all the speed. The instincts.
Well, because Diablo is a safety in a linebacker body. And Abram is a linebacker and a safety body.
Yes.
That's why.
Now, realistically, how do you see the Raiders finishing this year?
They're going to compete. They're going to go to the playoffs.
I agree.
They're going to compete. They're going to have to scrap in there because, I mean, the AFC West is loaded and the Chargers scare me to death just like they have every year forever. But the Chargers look crazy. The whole AFC looks crazy, and you never know. Because what happens is everybody thinks the whole AFC looks crazy, and next thing you know, the damn Bears are going to be good. Watch. You know, like, you never know.
Now, when I look at the AFC, I look at, yes, each team has a good quarterback, but the Broncos still have Garrett Bowles. And I'm sorry, as old as I am, I could probably give you 3 snaps and probably get by once with him. Like this, I mean, Garrett Bowles holds people like it's his job. He is worse than Alex Leatherwood. I said it. I'll stand on it. He's worse. He gets beaten.
Wow.
He grabs.
Yeah, I think he's bad, but you think, yeah, well, good. I hate him. I don't like him because of the team he's on, and I don't think he's that good of a player.
No.
I didn't know he was that bad technically.
He comes out of his stance, and it's robotic. You can, like, hear, like, have you been on, like, a roller coaster, and you can hear the gears click as you're going up?
He sound rickety?
Yes. Need some WD-40 or something. I mean, but I look at Denver, yes, they have a bunch of talent, but how much physical, abuse did Russell Wilson take in Seattle where they had no one blocking for him? And he's not young. He's like 35, so he's been in the league, 10, 11 years? I mean, should people expect the MVP type of Russell Westbrook, or should they expect just kind of not elite but still good? Plus, I think with Russell Westbrook there, the one person he helps most is Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy,
yeah. Yeah.
Because you had Drew Locke throwing the ball. He threw the ball like a wet frisbee.
Like a what?
Wet frisbee.
Why can't you just talk regular, bro?
But I look at the Chargers. The Chargers scare me. They do, because it just, but I think they're still a year or two off.
Why do you think that, though? I just, they're so loaded everywhere, bro. Like, look at that defense. Like, they, look at every level of their Chargers defense. I'm not even talking about Justin Herbert. And for some crazy reason, I'm still not on the Austin Eckler thing. I don't see it, bro. He's a guy. He's a guy.
He's a guy, but he does his, like, he's quick. He's stronger than he looks, and he gains yards in the passing game. I don't trust the back end of the Chargers secondary, except for Derwin James. Naz Adderley, I think he missed like 14 tackles last year. Like, you can't be a safety, the last line defense, and with this Olay nonsense. He's like a matador out there, just whiffing.
I don't know, man. The Chargers, I don't know. The Chargers. Anyway, the Raiders are still, they're still going to go ahead and play really well. Still going to go into the playoffs. Maybe kind of squeeze into the playoffs, but they have an opportunity to be better than they were last year. Last year, I mean, if had they kept number 11, I think this would have been a very, very, very different season. But we'll see.
I think they make it as a 5 seed.
Yeah.
Or I think the loss of Tyreek Hill helps the Raiders immeasurably.
Yeah, that is crazy. I just don't understand. That's nuts.
They rely on Juju Smith-Schuster to assume some of that role.
Maybe it was a financial thing or something about that, I guess. Maybe they couldn't afford all of that shit, but they definitely were not banking on Juju Smith-Schuster to be the new Tyreek.
No, because, I mean, that dude he's childish still. As he's immature. His teammates in Pittsburgh were like, they couldn't wait for him to leave because they're about winning and he's about, like, TikTok videos and dancing. And that's not going to fly in Kansas City because Andy Reid wants to win again before he retires. And I think Mahomes, I think, no, Hill changed the complexion of offense. I'm not a Clyde Edwards-Helaire guy. I don't see it.
I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a better player, but how come every time I watch their game, I'm like, hey, where's number 25 at? Or whatever number he is now. You know what I'm saying? Like, where is he at?
So, he's hurt.
Yeah.
He stays injured.
I don't want to hold none of that kind of stuff against him, but I think the little bit that I've seen of him, he looks good. I just, I haven't seen that much of him.
Plus, having Orlando Brown as a left tackle is funny to me.
Okay. Well, hey, is that a money? What is that about?
He left the Ravens because he wanted to be a left tackle.
Yeah, so but I'm saying, was it just money? Is that what is that about? When you finally elevate your play and now you're solid. Now let me go ahead and switch.
Because in his mind, he thought he could be a left. He's not awful, but he's an excellent right tackle and average left tackle. Where he's begging for Chandler Jones to just abuse him twice a year now.
Hey, I'm cool with it.
And I don't see the AFC being like a runaway for anybody. People want to see the Bills. Yes, they're the Bills, but I still don't trust the Bills. As good as the linebackers are, I don't trust the middle of the field not being open. And
who's the Colts quarterback?
Matt Ryan.
Oh, okay, never mind. Because I was just going to say, are the Colts going to look like the Raiders? But they got Matt Ryan.
Yeah, they have Matt Ryan. And Matt Ryan still hasn't gotten over the Super Bowl loss. He sit there and say, well, you just won game. No, Matt, it was a game that you could have cemented your legacy.
Yeah, and I have not seen him since, bro. I have not seen him since. And sometimes it's weird because that's one of those situations where you can't be looking at PFF grades and stats and shit, because you put him on paper most of the times throughout the season, he's going to look okay because he's got great yards. And fuck that. He's still not over it. No. He lost it. He ain't there.
Like, all they had to do on that 3rd and 10 was run the ball. They run the ball, they kick a field goal, they go up by 4 scores. Why are we passing the ball inside the red zone when you have a big lead? Why not be smart? Why not run the ball? Take time off the clock, kick the field goal. Game should be over. This is where people get too cute, and this is how legacies get broken. Now, before we head out, you are a boxing fan.
Yes, I am.
Did you catch the Shakur Stevens fight?
I did not catch the Shakur Stevens fight. Ev was at the fight. I didn't even see it. I saw the highlight where, you know, Valdez was getting socked up, but I didn't watch the whole fight.
This fight helped me get back into boxing. Like, I grew up every Saturday. It was like Wildwood of Sports. You had Ali, you had Duran, you had Sherry Leonard Hagler. These are the guys I grew up with. And I went away because MMA kind of slowly took over and boxing just kind of, it was like a once a year Floyd Mayweather fight. It was a bunch of nonsense. And I got tired of watching Tyson Fury be heavyweight champion, which should always go to an American guy, just saying, with the exceptions of Lennox Lewis, who I have no problem with. But and people still to this day will try to convince me that Deontay Wilder is an all-time great.
It's just all-time great power. Like,
yes.
Who has an equalizer like that? Who can go out there and fight that badly and become a champion? That's really
just swinging wild punches, just damn near windmilling people.
Yeah, but those things, they hurt. They hurt. So, Deontay, you listen to this. I'm not talking crap.
No, it hurt. I just thought that if with like a little more technique, he would have had a much dominant reign. Where I look at the heavyweight division now, I'm just I'm not impressed. Like, I'm not a fan. Like, I don't like Tyson Fury. I respect his ability, but his style of fight is just, it's the worst.
You know who I really like coming up? Jared Anderson. Watch. Just watch. You don't see this young kid. He's mean as hell. Just watch. He coming up. Jared Anderson.
Who is your favorite underrated fighter of all time?
Favorite underrated fighter of all time? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm talking about like Pernell Sweet Pete Whitaker type of deal or Tony type of deal.
Yes.
It's tough for me because I like Sweet Pete. I like James Toney. I like, you know, it's tough for me. And I was a Winky Wright guy for a long time, but he's not way up there like that.
He was unorthodox, but he won.
Yeah. Maybe it's Sweet Pete.
I would go Sweet Pea. I would go Donald Curry.
It's like every time I talk to you, you try to prove to people that you're old. it's like we don't know already. He's like, you always try to remind somebody.
But Donald Curry, and like he was smooth, and him, Tommy Hearns, another guy. Like guys like Iran Barkley's another guy.
See, and the only issues that I have with those kind of dudes, right? Like I love watching Hitman Hearns fight, but at the same time, I've only seen his greatest fights because that was kind of before my time in watching boxing. You know what I mean?
Go back. I mean, if I go overrated, I'll say underrated, Aaron Pryor.
Dang. Tragedy.
Yeah. Aaron Pryor. Is
he the one that killed somebody on accident?
No, that was Ray Mancini.
Oh, okay.
I remember that day because it was a Saturday and we're watching. I had to be about 8 years old. My entire family at my grandma's house. We're all on TV. There's like,
Is Aaron Pryor's name like? Why is there this drama for some reason? Like it just triggers in my head. What happened to him? Something happened. Did he get caught cheating or something? There's something.
No, he was just a Hall of Fame fighter. He had a bunch of bouts with Alexis Arguello, and they had to get rid of him.
Okay, now I know. Okay,
the cheating part was a trainer named Panama Lewis, who filled the water bottle with something funky, and he filled his fighter, like the wraps, he wrapped it with plaster of Paris.
Ooh.
So the guy he, his fighter's opponent was beaten damn near brain dead. Like beat him blind, where brain function, and he lived out the rest of his days kind of sitting in the house, and Panama Lewis was banned. He also was accused of taking a stuffing out of gloves.
Like Antonio Margarito cheating ass.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Like guys like that, where, I mean, it's boxing to me, it needs to come back and be better, because it's something with fathers and sons watching boxing. It's
something we might really be getting that Bud Crawford Errol Spence fight. That is a fight, because yeah. Bud Crawford is the man. Errol yes. Spence is a problem right now. So yeah, there is some good boxing right now. There's just not so many heavyweights, but there is boxing is coming back. I'm very excited about a lot of fighters.
Bud Crawford has a chance if he defeats Errol Spence to take that step into immortality.
Yeah, like, he just needs one of the meanest fighters of all time, so I like him.
he fights like he had a bad hand at spades, and he wants to take it out on his partner. Tell the folks about your YouTube channel and where they can find you.
Oh, man, you can actually find me everywhere. It's real easy. Big Corey 00. That's just BigCory00. Big Corey 00. I'm on Twitter all the time, Instagram, and now YouTube. Go to my channel. Like something and subscribe.
Like all of it. Subscribe to it. It's some of the most insightful, not just comments about football, just insightful life comments. Just one of the smartest people I know. Corey, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Appreciate you.
This has been another episode of the Four Press Raiders Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.